Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I want to welcome back our Evolving to Exceptional listeners to this week's episode of the podcast. We have with us today Catherine Neff. She is the Human Resources Director at Mineral Area College, and she's going to bring with us today or bring a conversation around a little bit, giving us a perspective of what it's like to be in higher education and to be navigating some of the challenges in the higher education space as a human resources leader and as a people leader, and talking about some of the elements around motivation and engagement and how do we do that effectively. So before we get into kind of the meat of our conversation, Catherine, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got to where you are, and why it is you do what you do.
Sure. I feel super lucky. HR was not the path I planned to go down. My entire growing up experience was wanting to be a journalist. And when other kids were playing house or playing school, I was running around with a pencil or whatever I could get and interviewing people. And I wanted to be in broadcast news. And I did get a chance to attend Mizzou. I did get a chance to work in broadcast news for a couple of years. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my life path. I didn't like the quickness of you only have a very short amount of time to get all the facts and all the information. And then that story's got to go on the news at 6 o'clock. And often I felt I wanted to be able to ask this or do that. And so it wasn't a good fit for me, that I felt like it was always the Cliff Notes version that I was sending out to people at home watching TV and trying to get the full story. So I moved back to the Midwest from the West Coast, where I had been working in television news, and I needed a job. And so I went to a temporary agency, and I went wherever they sent me to be a receptionist. They sent me to cover at a medical office. And it was a great experience because I got to work in a number of different industries. And I think probably because I was just willing to go wherever and do whatever. When a position came open at their office, they hired me for that. And so then I got to start recruiting. And that was a great experience for me. I really learned a lot. I got to be the person who would talk to the employer, find out what they needed, and then try to find them a person that was a good fit. So that was my introduction to human resources. And then through that position, the local community college needed someone to help place students. And so I got the opportunity to interview students who had finished their degree program, find out what they were looking for, and try to place them with employers. That community college was growing quite a bit, and they didn't have an HR department. Each dean's office was doing their own hiring, and they started an HR department, and I had a chance to get to know several people there. I really liked the environment of higher ed, and I was lucky enough to apply for and be that HR person, and that's where I've been for the last 15 years. I had no idea when I was learning how to interview and take notes at Mizzou in journalism school that would serve me well interviewing candidates and going through that process in the HR realm.
I think it's so interesting how you navigated your way into a different career, and yet clearly you've been at it for 15 years now. Clearly you're passionate and committed, especially to the organization itself, to the school, the college itself. I'd love for you to maybe dive into a little bit what it is you've been experiencing lately. What is it that you've been focused on, maybe dealing with in terms of challenges, and what it is you think is really important right now in the climate of your college and the dynamics that are going on there?
What's keeping me up at night lately that I'm concerned about is the mental wellness of our employees. And I think that's happening everywhere. I think for us in higher ed, we see a domino effect. Our faculty members are super concerned about students, and they're seeing changes in students. So a student who maybe started the semester really eager and really excited misses a class, and then comes to class and wearing a hoodie and just not engaged, no eye contact, just looking at a phone, not the same face that you saw on the first day of class. So our faculty are concerned about students, and then that kind of takes an emotional toll on them. And they feel maybe inadequate to help. They don't know what questions to ask. And sometimes that trickles to staff as well, because our staff interact with students all the time. If you work in the financial aid office, you're having a conversation with a student. The student is upset about finances and financial aid. And you need to have those skills and be able to communicate and know how to help just to do your job. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to provide more professional development. What can you say? What might help? But what we also need to think about is the way that assisting others sometimes takes from you. And then how can we recognize that our employees are also stressed and concerned and have that kind of worry about finances and emotions and just all the things that happen outside of work and during the workday? We are constantly looking at speakers we can bring in, programs we can start. And we've got a great wellness committee, but just always needing to think what resources, what tools, what can we make sure that employees have that they need?
So interesting. As you're talking about it, it dawned on me the kind of dual challenge you have in a college or higher education setting, because you have your faculty and your support staff who, like you said, need their own development, performance related, wellness related support. And your customers are really students. And so while they're not customers in like the traditional sense in terms of how the level of involvement and engagement, because like you said, they're there, they're coming to class, they're interacting. It's a unique relationship between an instructor and a student versus a salesperson selling products into a factory, right? It's a different dynamic. And so you've got students that are really still in the thick of development, most students who are still developing, growing, figuring out what they want to do in life and things like that. And then having those challenges, those life challenges that come into play, and they don't necessarily have their own support network. They don't necessarily have their own resources for those challenges, and the higher education or colleges and universities fill that role for students as well as staff. So it's a double challenge, it seems like.
Definitely. I think that's definitely the case. I think that I heard someone say, it was interesting to me that someone was talking about observing in an educational institution and watching students model the way they treat each other based on the way faculty and staff treat each other. So there's a culture and I think that we are really trying to make sure that we have a culture of care, that faculty care about each other, faculty care about students, faculty care about our community. I think it's just a matter of if someone needs a resource, that whether it's a faculty member or a student, that they're not afraid to ask and figure it out.
So what are some of those requests that come through? What are some of the things that you either are doing, would like to be doing to be adding that support, to be bringing in or addressing some of those challenges?
Sure. So we close campus and cancel classes one day each semester. And so we have professional development on those days so that faculty they're not canceling class, and that staff don't feel like, I can't leave my desk, my phone is ringing and students are coming up. So campus is closed on those days, and it's on our calendar, but 2-year calendar, so people know well in advance. And we just bring in speakers and we do activities. And one of the things that we did in our fall professional development day was yoga, and it was phenomenal. It's just nice to just do something different. And we've had more. We ask our employees at the end of that day, evaluate the day. What did you like? What did you not like? What do you want to do next time? And we did get several comments about, give us breathing techniques, give us self-care strategies. And folks even want nutrition. I think that people are recognizing that life is tough and that I do want to get good sleep and I do want to eat well and care for myself. And I can bring my best self to work if my tank is full and I'm taking care of myself. We have been just looking for as many resources as we can to consider stress management techniques and any kind of wellness options that we can to add to those days.
So how do you identify, you talked about like surveying, getting the feedback back from folks. I'm curious what goes into identifying what will really make a difference, what's effective versus not effective, and maybe even a step before that of what it is you want to get out of the investment in time, what it is, maybe I'm not articulating this well, but what is it that you are, what's your objective in having professional development days? If you could define your ideal outcome of having those days and of doing that work, what are you hoping to achieve? And then how do you know if you're achieving it?
What we're hoping to achieve is a refresh, recharge. So if you work at Mineral Area College, you are focused on students all the time. That's why we're here. That's our priority. So I'm in the classroom presenting content, or I'm in the admissions office trying to get you all the information you need about the degree plan that you want to work on. If professional development day should be a complete opposite of that, we need to pour into you. So we're going to start a few minutes late. We're going to end a few minutes early. We're going to provide you lunch. We're going to wear whatever you want to wear. Campus is closed, so it's very casual. Show up and just relax. We just want you to be able to sit back and listen and take it in on that day. And the goal would be that at the end of that day, people feel like that was worth my time. I learned something. I connected with someone. And even if just people feel like that was fun, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. We did a speed networking session, like speed dating, but just learning about your coworkers. So you pair up in twos and you get this list of questions and you just learn, what's your favorite movie? What do you like to eat? We have a lot of new employees and people connecting with each other. And I may never see someone who works in a building across campus, but because we participated in that activity, the next time I see that person in the cafe, it's, oh, how's your cat, Odie? It just gives us a chance to connect and refresh and recharge and hopefully gain some information that's useful in our jobs. Mm-hmm. Some of those professional development day sessions are pretty skill-based. We had a session on Google Sheets, and some people, it's a practical tool. And so you sit down at the machine and you play around and hopefully you learn some skills that make your job more efficient. We do some tracking, and so we measure how many people attend each session. So when you ask, how do you know if the day was a success? It's hard. It's hard to measure. Some of it's just narrative. Some of it's just people saying it was a good day. And we don't get even really 50% of our folks to fill out an evaluation. I wish we had a really high percentage, because then we would feel like this is statistically significant. And we know that 75% of our folks love the day, but we do really look closely at the feedback we do get. And if we have a session that has low attendance, then we're thinking we did one on financial literacy and it wasn't very well attended. And so we'll do something different next time. It's just, I think, constantly trying to evolve it and improve it.
I love that. And one thing that came to mind as you were talking, and I just did a talk for the Association for Talent Development here in Missouri yesterday. And in talking to them, we talked about the difference between vertical development and horizontal development. And horizontal development is really that skills, that knowledge, that experience, that Google Docs thing you were talking about, right? It's the way I compare it is, it's like pouring water into a cup. It's filling up your cup. It's giving you more information on how to do things, your competence. And then there's vertical development, which is more like actually getting a bigger cup. How do you expand your capacity? So whereas horizontal development is all about doing, how do I do something? Vertical development is how I'm being when I show up to do something. How much capacity do I have for integrating that knowledge, for taking in that knowledge? And I use this example, and I'll get back to why this is relevant in a second. I use this example of if my kids, my four-year-old twin girls, come home after a day of school and they're tired and they're cranky and they're hungry. And I sit down with them at the table and I'm like, let's work on our numbers and some math. They're not going to, it's not going to go very well. They're not going to have an enjoyable time because they're already at capacity. They don't have any capacity at that point to take in more information. And one of the challenges I think we see when we're talking about training and development and working with professionals is if they're maxed in terms of their capacity, if they have too much stress, too much things going on in their life, they're navigating so much, there's no capacity to bring in more skills. And so one of the things I've seen in some of our clients is that they keep trying to train people on things and they're not helping them to build that capacity to be able to take in and learn some more things and develop some more skill sets. And so the reason I bring that up in your context is I like that you have a mix of some of that skills development, that horizontal development, with some capacity building. Yoga is great with in terms of breath techniques and presencing and understanding movement in the body and creating movement in the body. And those are all things from a neurophysiological perspective that actually help us expand our capacity, help us to have greater self-awareness, help us to have greater presencing, access to more of our neural networks and intelligence. And so I love that you have a balance or a mix of different activities that you're having them do. And by doing that, you're actually enhancing their learning of the skills too, because you're bringing those things together.
That is fascinating. I love what you said about we are not human doings, we're human beings. And sometimes I think we get so focused on the metrics. Let's look at the performance metrics. What can we measure? If you don't measure it, it doesn't matter, right? So we want to, how many of this did you do? And how many of that did you do? And it's so interesting because I've never thought about that from that perspective before, that you can build your capacity so that you can do more, but you have to do it the right way.
Exactly. And if I think what we get into a lot is that it's easy to schedule training. Like that's an easy, there's plenty of people to come do a training, come teach a new skill. And there's quite literally infinite skills that you can learn, right? I could study every minute of every day of my entire life and barely scratch the surface on the skills that I could develop, right? There's so many. And so we fall into what's easy. It's easy to schedule a training. It's easy to schedule something for somebody to get skills. And I'm actually not negating it. It's important. We do have to know how to do things. Like we have to develop those skill sets too. But yeah, our being, how we show up when we're going to do something is going to impact what we do and how well we do it. And so when we're thinking about human performance and human development, being aware of that component is just as important. I liken it sometimes to we replace our computers every 2 years, but we rarely even reboot our bodies.
Definitely.
And so it's something to think about, right?
Definitely. Definitely. I know the panic that I feel when you see the battery getting super low and you only have so much left. I often wish that we had that on our physical, like, where are you with your charge? You only have so much energy. And if you're low on it, we tend to try to just keep going instead of recharging.
I think it's a great point. And there actually are metrics in terms of like our heart rate variability. So our heart rate variability indicates the degree of stress we have that we're holding in our bodies and our energy reserve. So how are we doing? How's our body doing? And I think what's so interesting is when you measure your heart rate variability, and I started doing this a couple years ago. And so I track it in a couple different apps so I can get the picture of it. And of course, we're like the it's usually the best while we're sleeping, our first thing in the morning. And then we get stressed and it wears down throughout the day and things like that. But what I think is so interesting about it is how often we don't recognize it naturally. We think we've got it, everything's fine. But then when you look at the heart rate variability, you're like, oh no, my stress, my body's holding this. My body's feeling the impacts of this, even if I'm masking it, even if I'm able to move through it. It's still having that impact. And I think those are some of the like newer metrics we can use and get and equip people with to help them have that understanding and focus on that part of how they're doing in their environments.
I think being aware of that might feel a little bit overwhelming to someone who's, I don't know how to fix it, but I think it's just a matter of being aware of it and thinking about it and checking in with yourself so that you can understand, wow, like, why am I so anxious or nervous about this, and do some self-reflection.
And certainly it's not something most of us were taught at any point. It's not part of the curriculum in at least any education system I grew up in. In my years of training,
Same.
It's not part. Yeah. So it's something that I think is can bring a lot of value to the conversation when it comes to performance and development.
Definitely.
So what do you think? You and I talked a bit about motivation and engagement and how do we bring that into communities? How do we really increase that? And I'd love to just get some of your thoughts on, in your experience, what either in your career or as you've worked with and supported people, what helps to motivate or engage them?
Wow. I need the answer to that, Jessica. That is something that we're really just constantly thinking about and asking. Right now, my strategy is listening, trying to understand what people need. And for us, recognizing that we have a very diverse group of employees when it in age. And so we have some workers in their 20s who have goals and plans and thoughts. And we have workers in their 70s who have very different thoughts about work and what work looks like and how to work with colleagues, and trying to listen to what employees need, trying to help them collaborate and cooperate and work together. This is going to sound probably really trivial to anyone who maybe doesn't work in human resources, but dress code. Oh my goodness, I am shocked at how different that is for different generations. I think about, for example, my grandparents. If you are to go and visit my grandparents on a Saturday at 8:30 in the morning, knock on their door, and they will open the door completely dressed with jewelry and shoes and like ready for whatever. That kind of how you present yourself, and that is part of an important piece of how they're extending themselves to someone else and how they communicate almost. It is frustrating to some of our younger generation workers when you set up this dress code, because they might say, I work in an office where no one ever sees me. Why is it not okay for me to be wearing flip-flops and pajama pants? It's just a really different thought pattern. And even the way the office appears. So if it's my office and my space, I don't like to work with the lights on. So I want to turn my lights off. And a worker from the baby boomer generation might come to our office and complain and say, it doesn't appear very welcoming. Why would you walk into somebody's office with the lights out? It doesn't even seem like they're open for business that day. So those kinds of, they engage with work very differently. And just trying to listen and understand, because if we create a very strict policy that says it doesn't matter what your position is, everybody needs to wear a suit jacket and heels and very specific dress code, no matter what position you have, we have a lot of employees who are saying, I'm going to choose to work somewhere else because that doesn't motivate me at all. It motivates me to go and find a different job. So I think it's gotten harder because there is such a diverse range of thoughts and feelings about what people need at work and what people need to work well and how we work with and communicate with each other.
And it makes me think back to the ways of being, that the way that we grow up, the way that we live our lives throughout all of our experiences creates a set of neural pathways, like the brain, the neural networks in our brains and bodies wire together. What wires together fires together. It creates our patterns, our ways of being. And when you grow up, it's really what creates different generational trends. You grow up during different times, which creates different ways of being because you've had these different collective set of life experiences. And so you use the example of those that are in their 70s and being ready to go, or being, they grew up in, for most of their time, in a world that operated a very different pace. They had more time. Things went through the mail, not through email. Even with email, there wasn't like the rate of exchange that there is today in terms of how quickly you're expected to respond or to deal with things or technology changes. Maybe they went through one system over 20 years, not five systems over 10 years, if you're lucky. And so then you fast forward to those that are entering the workplace right now, the Gen Z folks who are just coming into the workplace, and they grew up in a tech, they've never not known technology. They've grown up with it all the time. Everything's changing so fast all the time that their ways of being are, I'll wait 5 minutes and it'll probably change. Like that's how fast things change. And there's this clash in terms of how our patterns work and what our experiences are. And it's really hard for those that have never experienced the other to necessarily recognize that it's not necessarily obstinance or frustration even. It is literally a different biological, physiological pattern. And I even talk about like the return to work, where there's this resistance for some people to go back into the office in different settings. And that some of that is actually physiological. People's bodies got used to working in a different environment. And when they go to a new environment, when they change to return, or sometimes maybe for the first time, if people graduated during the pandemic and have been always working remotely, that's a whole different skill set and way of being, way of working that they haven't developed yet. And so their bodies might literally be in a fight or flight mode in response to that setting. I think it's an interesting way to consider those motivations, those differences, as not necessarily being personality, but actually neurophysiological ways of being. And if we approach it through that lens, how does that change what we do?
Perspectives are so different, and it doesn't necessarily give us all the answers, but just being aware and listening hopefully helps us be more empathetic with each other. Another educator said to a group of us recently that middle school kids feel like Wi-Fi is a commodity. And so it used to be that if something major happened in the community and the power was out, you had to cancel school because you didn't have any power. Now students feel like the Wi-Fi's out, we can't have school, because that has just become a commodity to them. They've never not known it. So what you were mentioning with digital natives, if the network goes down, there are some employees who are like, I can't work on anything. So it's interesting to think about the different ways we think about work and our perspectives. But what's exciting about that is that we can learn from each other. And there are things that I have a new coworker, and her technical skills are fabulous. And we were working on something together, and she was like, hey, did you know you could do this? And I was like, yay, like that is so cool. And nobody's ever shown me that before. So if we're willing to learn from each other, We can expand the capacity of our organization, but we just have to be willing to do that as opposed to being like thinking of it as a negative from the start. The reason that you want to wear sloppy clothes is because you're sloppy. We just have to be willing to try to look at it from someone else's perspective.
Yeah. And I think part of that too is making it not right or wrong. Because I think that's when we get into trouble, as we say, it's right to dress this way. It's wrong to dress this way. And on either side of the coin, right? Like, why would you spend all that money on fancy clothes when you can just wear, that doesn't make sense. Why would I do that? From one perspective, while the other perspective is, why are you so sloppy? So what we do, what we tend to do is we make ourselves right. And we make anybody who's different or has a different way of being wrong. And if we can shift to saying, okay, that's an interesting way of being. What can I learn from that? Both ways, there may be really creative solutions. And there also may be situations, and I always, dress code is funny, is one of the funny ones to me, because in my past as a talent management, as a VP of talent management, that was the part of the employee handbook that we refused to ever touch. We just didn't edit it, because if we edited it, it would draw attention to it and mean we had to deal with it. And so it was better to just ignore it entirely. We're not touching it. I don't care if we're not following it. We're just not doing anything with it. And because it creates such passionate stances. And it's interesting because it's on something that actually has nothing to do with, in most contexts, the application of or delivery of the work.
That is interesting. If we can all just agree that part of our mission and part of our job is to be good models for our students, like that's the piece that I think makes us say, unfortunately, we're going to have to touch it and we're going to have to try to abide by it, because it's our job to be a good model to our students. And we want our students to see a professional workplace and what that looks like. And it is really tough.
Yeah. And getting clear with those expectations. So saying, okay, why is this the expectation? What's going into it? Where are the places where there's maybe flexibility around it? Where is it really rigid? Of course, every company needs to have a policy around not having certain types of clothing, right? You don't want distractive clothing. You don't want things that are offensive or going to hurt other people. You want to make sure that clothing matches from a safety standpoint, especially for manufacturing workplaces. There's a lot of different elements that go into what that looks like. And then there's also a whole lot of gray in between there, and ways for compromise and finding ways that fit or work for folks. And I think sometimes we spend too much time arguing the opposing points than figuring out what's the real expectation and why is it the expectation and what is that expectation furthering? Like, what's the purpose that it's furthering, and making sure that we're all aligned around that. And that's one of what I say is the four keys to having people operating at their best performance, is some of that expectation setting. But it's amazing how much time you can end up spending on stuff like that, right?
Definitely.
I think it's interesting you brought up trying to figure out people's motivation. What has your experience been for yourself in terms of your motivation around a focus on people and making a difference in this space? What is it that drives you from a motivation standpoint? And what would you like to see your organization being able to do more of?
Sure. From a skills perspective, in like a strengths finder environment, I'm a learner and I love to learn. And I think that's one thing that draws me to higher ed and makes me really enjoy this space. One of my favorite things to do is interview faculty members, because we do a teaching demonstration and we ask them in an environment with kind of a search committee, all the questions that you would normally be asking in an interview about why you want to work here and how do you motivate students? students. And but then we walk into their classroom, and we don't send students into the classroom, but the search committee becomes their students. And I love that. I love that because there are just some people who are so good at explaining. And I have learned so much about mitochondria and physics and accounting and like all of these different things that it's just when you don't have to take a test and get a grade, it is so awesome to just be able to sit in a classroom. And I love to learn. And that is motivating to me. Learning something new or getting to go to a conference and kind of, I'm going to try that. Or sharing ideas. We have a leadership academy on our campus where 10 employees get a chance to partner with 10 employees from another institution. And we spend an entire year just focused on leadership skills. And at the end of that program, they have been all given a community college problem and they work in groups of four to present solutions. And our leadership teams from both institutions are invited to come and listen. And I love that event because some of their solutions are just incredible. And so we had that event recently and I rode with several colleagues and the entire ride home was so exciting because it was like, what about this idea? What could we do with that? And that whole sharing of ideas and trying to think of better ways to do things is motivating to me. I also am really motivated by people. I like people. I struggled when we all had to go home. It's just more difficult to connect across a screen versus in a room face to face. And we're doing just a fun Secret Santa. So nobody had to participate, but if you wanted to, you could answer these simple little questions. What's your favorite snack? What's your favorite drink? Do you have a favorite sports team? Do you have a pet? And so you answered these questions and you threw it into this little Google form. And then we created this random pairing. And so all over campus, people are sneaking Snickers bars and Mountain Dews in people's mailboxes and on their desks. And I love it. I love it. Because some days work is hard. And you know what? To come back to your desk on a day that's been a rough day and find a Mountain Dew, that seems so trivial, but it's like fun. And so I think just anything that we can do that connects people and just gives them a little bit of joy in their day is motivating to me. But I also recognize that we had a fairly low percentage of our campus who wanted to participate in that. So that doesn't motivate everybody. And understand what motivates others and make sure that we're trying to do that too is challenging.
So what do you see? What do you see in the higher education space? A lot has changed in terms of, and there's a lot of conversation about how many people, like the millennial generation, getting lots of education, and then a question about whether they're getting the value out of that education in a lot of cases. And maybe the newer generations, not all even going directly into higher ed or taking some other paths as a result of that, as well as a lot of the virtual and remote work, which was already a remote learning, which was already a trend before COVID, but I'm sure it was even more of a trend as part of COVID and having to navigate those challenges. What are you seeing in terms of higher ed as the people leader in the organization as what's really important or strategic for you to be focusing on in your organization, your college to be focusing on for the future in terms of higher education, your university, but or your college, but also just in general as well? It doesn't have to be just yours, but overall in terms of higher ed.
One of the things I love about higher ed that's so different from the corporate world that I came from is the collaboration. When I worked as a corporate recruiter, I would not in a million years call an office across the street and say, hey, how are you doing this? I love that we all work together and that we're public. We're not for profit. We're here to educate people and that's our goal. And so we want to work together. And there, we know that some programs are super expensive. For example, radiology is an expensive program. And if our institution and the institution 40 miles from us can't both offer that, then they're offering that and they're doing a good job of it. And so we want to cooperate on that. And students who live in this area who want to do that program. We need to figure out pathways where we can work together. We don't offer vet tech and they offer vet tech. And so what we offer construction building technology and they don't. So I think it's just a matter of us trying to collaborate and work together. There's so many things happening that have changed. High schools are really encouraging their students to take dual credit. And it can be a great thing for families. If you're going to take a rigorous Spanish one class in high school, and you're going to use the same textbook, and you're going to have the same curriculum as the college class, why not go ahead and get the college credit for it? It costs them less to do that. They're doing it at their high school where they're comfortable, but the department coordinator at the college level is overseeing that the curriculum is equivalent. But what happens then often is that you've got some students who are graduating high school at the same time that they're graduating with their associate's degree because they've taken so much dual credit that at that point they're ready to leave to be a college junior. And so it's just an interesting thought that enrollment is down for a lot of reasons. I think one is that dual credit has become super popular, and a lot of students are taking a lot of those community college classes in high school. So then they're ready just to go straight to a four-year school when they graduate high school. And the other thing that you mentioned with just a shift in society that kind of is saying, wait a minute, does everybody need to go to college? There are a lot of fantastic living wage jobs and trades. And so we need electricians and we need plumbers and we need people who know HVAC and construction building technology and welding. And we recently built a tech center. And so we have more programs that are focused in those areas. And I think that there's a little more information for younger students to think through what is it really that you want to focus on and not just assume that you need to go to college, that you need to think about what is your path, what skills do you want to obtain, what do you need to get there, and trying to encourage students not to take things they don't need. Nobody wants to see someone finish a program with a whole lot of debt and then face trying to get a first job and worry about where am I going to live, how am I going to buy groceries, how am I going to afford transportation. And on top of all that, pay this huge loan back. So I think that there's just a shift in trying to make sure students are educated about what program they need, what direction they want to go, what's best for them. And there's so many options. I think it's a little bit overwhelming because sometimes you ask a student, what's your degree plan? And you just see this, I don't know. And I think us just supporting and encouraging and saying, that's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I think there's value in learning no matter what it is. So many skills are transferable.
Go ahead.
And I can give them myself as an example of that. I don't look at the 4 years I spent working on a bachelor's in journalism at Mizzou as a waste of time because I learned how to write. And I learned how to communicate. And those skills are super valuable to me today, not working in broadcast news. So I think just helping students understand that you want to learn how to be a critical thinker. You want to learn how to write. You want to learn how to communicate. And those skills are going to be transferable.
You know, what it makes me wonder is, you know, or what comes to mind for me as you talk about that is that it's one of the things I think is really valuable about some of the certifications and things different colleges are giving of a 2-year certification in this or a 1-year certification in this. Or so you get a really focused, but it's not like you're getting a full degree, but you're getting a really focused amount of knowledge and information to help you maybe go explore that more and decide if you're going to go get a full degree. You want to go deeper into that realm. And a lot of when universities were really created and in the beginning as they started, as higher education became more in practice, a lot is knowledge transfer, right? A lot is, it's almost all skills development, almost all knowledge, information, skills development of these capabilities. And so it makes me think about, yeah, how can you look at ways to give people what they need in terms of that, and to then be able to give it maybe to them again in 6 years when it's now something different than it originally was, right? Because I think that is the other challenge, or at least workplaces keep finding themselves up against, is now I need a different skill set than maybe what was before. Do I go just hire people with that skill set, or how do I get my people to have that skill set? And I think that's going to be an ongoing challenge too.
That's fascinating to me from the perspective of how do you train your workforce? We have a phenomenal workforce development director, and we have these programs that are stackable credentials. And maybe it's, I'm just going to start out here and I'm going to get OSHA certified. Right. Once you do that, you can, it's like Lego blocks. You can add on this and then you can add on that. And before you know it, you do have a 2-year degree. So I like those pieces because it's just pick up the piece that you need. And if you need more later, come back and get it. And it all blends together. But it is an interesting thing to think about if you're not in that position where you're going to school and you're getting that knowledge, but you're out in the workforce, but you need to update your skill set. How do we deliver that? And trying to figure out, is it in a professional development day environment where you're sitting in a lecture room and hearing a speaker? Is it more of a learning management style where it's online and it's just rolled out and you sit at your desk and you all do it individually? I think that everyone learns best a little bit differently what their learning preference is. And so from the HR perspective, trying to figure out how can we provide it in all these different formats so that people are able to gain those skills in a way that they learn best.
And I think to your point too, fit it within life. Because going to college, as you graduate from high school, if you go directly into college and you have maybe that dedicated time to just focus on being in college, that is a unique opportunity that doesn't work as well once you've got a family and you do have a career and a job. And now am I going to stop working for 2 years or 4 years or 3 years to go pursue this degree or this next step that I really want in my life? And that's a really hard decision. My brother-in-law just went back to school to get his master's and in graphic design and in the space that he's in. And that's a hard decision and a hard choice when you've got a family and you've got responsibilities and things. It does beg the question that if people's careers are going to change as frequently as we're now seeing, or and at least predicting that they're going to keep changing because of technology changing and needs changing, how do we create the solutions that allow people to upskill at the rate at which they're going to need to do?
Huge challenge. Huge. I feel like there are a lot of manufacturing employers who understand that and are moving in that direction. And so they are sometimes even bringing a trainer to their facility and creating that space and saying, okay, you're certified to run this CNC machine, but you can gain this certification. And they bring the trainer in and they dedicate a few hours and they get them certified in something else right there in that space, like you said, where you don't have to make a life change. It's seamless and integrated. And I think there are some allied health opportunities that are recognizing that as well. We have several partnerships with hospitals in which they're recognizing that we have this, we have a nursing shortage. We have this great group of LPNs, but let's offer within our facility a bridge course to get them to an RN degree. And so it's interesting that some industries are doing that. And I think it's working well. And yet, not all industries have seen the benefit or the need maybe to do that.
I think it's still new, and figuring out how to afford to do it is a big factor. And then I think the other thing, at least, and this is theory, I don't have research around this, but I believe that because people have endured so much stress, because they keep so many people are at capacity or even over capacity, going back to that being issue, if people don't get the expanded capacity, then we just keep trying to teach them things and it doesn't go anywhere. It just spills over. It just spills out. And it's hard. It is possible. We know that our brains can continue to create new connections and they can grow throughout our whole lives now. And it can be really difficult if you've gotten comfortable with a way of working, a way of being, a type of role, to then be facing having to completely change. And so I think the other challenge that universities, workplaces have in front is helping people in parallel to expanding or relearning skills to also be learning themselves and how and their own capacity and how to have more of it and how to navigate the changes and the struggles that come up with having to learn something new and having to have new experiences and all of those things.
I think comfort is definitely a space where some people want to stop and sit a while.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Catherine, I think you and I could go all day. Thank you so much. I've loved this conversation. Do you have any final thoughts or words of wisdom, something, anything else you'd like to share with our audience as we wrap this up?
I don't think there's a magic answer. I don't think there's a quick, easy, do these three things and it'll motivate your entire workforce. I think it's just a constant, if you're authentic about it, if you're sincere about it, if you care about people, and if you're constantly asking and just trying everything that you can and willing to, okay, here's an idea that we haven't tried, so let's try it. And if it doesn't work, then we just try something else. I think that's the key for me, is not just constantly on a search for a magic answer, because I don't think that magic answer is out there. I think it's just coming in with your best self every day and working as hard as you can to try to make it a better workplace for everybody who's around you.
I think that's wise words there. And I think that when it comes to people, I love to say that when it comes to people, there's no simple answer. That nothing is easy, because we are incredibly complex, adaptive, interesting human beings. And as a result, not only is there infinite potential and opportunity for growth and development and ability to intentionally evolve ourselves, there is also challenge in helping people to be able to do that successfully. So as we wrap up this episode, I want to encourage all of our listeners to just remember to always keep evolving, keep growing, keep looking for those opportunities to rewire your neural pathways so that you can live your best life, so that you can have more exceptional experiences on your life journey, and always keep looking for those ways that you can amplify the wisdom in the world and especially in the world of work. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be back again next week with another episode.